If you decide to listen to the theme song, turn to second 12. If you decide to skip the theme song, turn to second 46. We're talking Choose Your Own Adventure. Hit it. It was 1979. The Soviet Union and the United States signed the SALT II Treaty. Sparkling belts and beaded handbags were in. 13 tornadoes ripped through Texas and Oklahoma, and Bantam Books published an interactive series of children's literature. I'm your host, Jerry D., with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s, toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now, joining me are not one, but two Totally Rad Christmas All-Stars. The first is the site runner and editor of the Way Awesome Holidays Unknown entertainment site, Jason Rhodes. The second you'll know from Christmas Time in the City podcast, Chris Sisley. Guys, how's it going?
It's going good, Jerry. It's great to be back again, even though it's only been a couple weeks.
Yeah, for real, yeah. Thanks for coming back.
Hi, Jerry.
Hey, Chris.
Thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it. It's always nice to talk to someone that's not my wife.
Yeah, other people, especially in this time, are definitely much needed. But guys, I mean, for real, thanks for coming on. It's always fun talking with you. So I'm excited to talk about tonight's topic.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one, too. It brings up a lot of memories in the old elementary school library.
Yeah, Choose Your Own Adventure. I mean, I remember like waiting for those, you'd get those, gosh, I don't even know what they call them, the order forms from Scholastic books. And, I would go through and circle the ones that I wanted. And of course, we could only afford like one or two. But I remember always like going and trying to see if I could find the Choose Your Own Adventure books or anything like that, because they were so much fun. I mean, it's like He-Man, you know, they kind of focused on, you know, I have the power and kids wanting power. And in those books, you really had the power. You could, you know, choose your destiny, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it definitely was. And from what I read, these books actually got a lot of kids into reading that wasn't really interested in it to begin with, because it let you make those decisions and everything. So it sparked interest in other kids. And I thought that was kind of cool about them.
Yeah, for sure. I always kind of like to read, but I know for real, these are the ones that kind of really pushed me over the edge and really into reading, just because, I mean, who doesn't want to read a book about space vampires, you know?
And the books end up being so short. You can say to yourself, like, I read this whole book, and it ends up, it's only like a 6-page story. So like, if you're a kid, like that's a huge achievement if you can say that you read a book.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember just thinking, especially if you took the shorter, you know, like you mentioned, the shorter ones, it's like, wow, I read that whole thing, you know, and then you go back and you start again. Now, this particular book that we're going to be talking about, which is Home in Time for Christmas from 1987, this was from the Bantam Skylark series. So these were actually geared towards younger readers. So where the older ones were like from 7 to 14, this was like from, you know, 5 to 7 or 5 to 8 age group there.
That explains a lot.
It does, yeah, yeah. They're not quite as intense, but it's the only Christmas book in there. So I had to link it up somehow. But yeah, I mean, I remember them having a lot more like awful endings, and it turns out, yeah, this particular series, the Bantam Skylark series, there was very few of the bad endings. They were a little bit easier to read, and it was just to kind of spark interest, and then you would transition over to the real ones, you know, and then you'd talk about like the ninjas and you know, time travel and all that stuff. And so although there is some time travel and magic, which is weird, just randomly introduced all of a sudden, but
and I noticed what you said, you were talking about how most of the books had more bad endings than good ones. And going through this one, the last choice I made was what led me to the bad ending. And all the way through, I thought, well, it's a Christmas book. I guess they're not going to throw anything in there. And then the last one got me.
Well, I guess that's good. That means you normally make good decisions, right? Oh man, yeah, it's almost like a gauge of your decision making abilities. And I mean, I remember my favorite one was the one I mentioned earlier, the Space Vampire, and it was about a whole alien race of vampires that had to invade Earth, and it's like your job to stop them. And I almost always died every single time. Like, it was always some sort of gruesome death. And the one time that I won, even though there were a bunch of other endings where you win, but the one time I won, it's only because we were out in space on a spaceship, and the doors, you know, to the bay windows or something opened, and the sun just shone through and it killed them. But we were so close to the sun that I also like overheated and died as well. So I saved the day, but I also ended up dead anyway. So, oh well. Talk about a bummer series.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, that's the one that always sticks out most in my mind. But going through the list of these, like, I remember quite a few actually. So there was, let's see, the ones that I remember. And the series actually ran quite a long time. It was like from 79 to 98. So it was almost 20 years of books, which I thought was really cool. But let's see, House of Danger, I remember that one. The Secret of the Pyramids, of course, the one I mentioned about the space vampire. The Dragon's Den. I mean, some of these just sound awesome, you know? Like, they'd make great RPG Nintendo games or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one about the Abominable Snowman, and even one about the Titanic. But the Abominable Snowman was the one that I couldn't think of a specific title when you brought it up. And then after I got to looking online, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember these books. It took a little refresher.
Yeah. The Secret of the Ninja. That one was cool. Because, you know, when you're young, especially in the 80s, you know, there was like American Ninja like ninjas were everywhere, you know? And so to me, I remember Secret of the Ninja. Ooh, that sounds awesome.
But ninjas have so many secrets.
Apparently. Yeah. Yeah. They're the silent assassins, right?
I remember coming across these. I remember it was a G.I. Joe one that I had seen at our school library and thinking, this is like amazing. I need to get the whole series. But I think I must have been like super young and had no one around me to tell me you can't do it like that. I think I just put like a bunch of like nickels in an envelope and like scrawled on the envelope with like a crayon and maybe put like 15 stamps on it or something and just hope. And I never got the book, obviously, but
yeah,
I really, really wanted the rest of the series.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. And I mean, that's pretty adorable with the sending it off and trying, hoping for the best. And,
yeah. And it's like, this is probably about $3.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. What's cool is that, so the series actually originated with Edward Packard, and he kind of came about the idea. He was telling stories to his daughters and he was literally just running out of ideas. And so he started getting them to, you know, to come up with ideas of, well, what would you want to see happen? And so as he was going through and telling, you're making up endings for these different choices that they make, he thought, I wonder if I should write this down. And so he kind of came out with this book and he tried scouting it out, I guess. And he got turned down like crazy. And finally, R.A. Montgomery over at the Vermont Crossroads Press actually published one. And he realized that like there was something here. So he started making deals and finally got it to Bantam Books. So, I mean, it's kind of cool, but what I really liked was that towards the end of it, they started getting really crazy where there would be like an awesome, like amazing ending, but only on like a page that you accidentally like skipped to. So like none of your choices would actually lead you to there, but it was just like a random guess. And then there was one called, let's see, The Race Forever. And it was like endless page loops. Like it would literally just take you on different loops. And so your story would like never end. I think it would drive me crazy. But that's like the ultimate prank, right?
Yeah. I guess I'll go to page 17 again, I guess.
Yeah. Wait.
And then it's so hard to like retrace your steps to get to the point where you can make the other decision that I think I would just give up.
I think. Yeah, I would too. Yeah, yep, for real.
Me too.
You got to like write it down or something, you know.
Just keep your pinky in that one spot. And then if it's good, then you can move the pinky.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah, because nobody uses bookmarks, you know.
No.
So he wrote the first three, Edward Packard, and then R.A. Montgomery, who kind of helped him along. He ended up writing over 50 of them. And there was about 180 something in the series all over those 20 years, not counting all the other series as well. One thing that I thought was really cool was that eventually they ended up selling it to a company called ChooseCo, and they're the ones that are producing them now. But they did y'all ever see the Black Mirror Bandersnatch?
Yes.
Is it good? Because I haven't seen it yet.
It was okay. There was someone on the show that I liked from something else I'd seen, so I was happy to see him. But it was okay. All those Black Mirror things are a little bit twisted in a weird way. But it's all right. It's fun. It was a fun gimmick, at least.
Right. Well, apparently, ChooseCo and Choose Your Own Adventure now are they filed a suit against Netflix and Bandersnatch for kind of stealing their idea. So I'm kind of curious to see how that's going to turn out.
Yeah, that's an uphill battle.
Yeah, for real. I really doubt they'll make any headway, but I mean, that's, you know, to each their own. But this book that we're talking about is from 1987, and it's called Home in Time for Christmas. It was written by R.A. Montgomery, as well as his partner, Shannon Gilligan, who ended up programming computer software.
Probably over lunch one day.
Probably, I'm sure, yeah.
Like, they had 15 minutes to spare, so they wrote this book.
Not a napkin.
Yeah, for real. You can just see him like in a meeting, like, you know, with the cigar in his mouth, like, hey, take a memo. Writing the whole plot on it. But for some reason, and I know it was one of the younger ones, but for some reason, I still kind of like this book, even though it was like super easy to read. And my daughter ended up really liking it. I mean, she read it, and of course, she read it in no time also. She's 8. I mean, I guess if you nutshell it, it would be a boy travels back in time and has to get back before Christmas.
That's pretty much the gist of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
He kind of like stumbles through time. Like, it wasn't his intention to be a time traveler. He just kind of ended up in London in the... Yeah, he was decorating the tree with his sister.
Yeah. Which is... the whole thing is kind of strange. So yeah, it starts off, he's decorating the tree with his sister, and it's his turn. You know, he's, you know, however many years old now, it's his turn to put the star on the top. And so he climbs the ladder because he's going to get it, and a rung breaks. So it's a pretty crummy ladder. And, and so he falls and hits his head, and suddenly he winds up in London in, what is it? It's like 1840 something.
1842, I think.
Yes. And so he's like, what are you talking about? And he meets these two boys, Daniel and Aubrey. And they're like, yeah, we built this time machine and we brought you back in time. Which is awesome because, I mean, how many young boys, you know, could actually build a time machine?
Yeah. And they had to do it like Doc Brown style from Back to the Future with the train engine, because I'm pretty sure that electricity wasn't a big thing then. Like, it had to be steam powered or something like that. I don't think the first house, I looked it up, and like the first house in England was like 1878, something like that, that had electric lights.
Oh man. That's...
It could be steam, you know, it's Doc Brown did it. So
that's true. Yeah.
They could too.
That's true. They could be, they could just be like super geniuses. I don't know. But I love how it's just like, yeah, we brought you back in time. Aren't you happy to be here?
Yeah.
And he's like, but it's Christmas. So take me back. You know, my mom might worry. She's going to call the police. And they're like, oh, we hadn't thought about that. It's like, oh, but you thought about building a time machine. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, this whole story was fun. I mean, it was ridiculous to as all get out, but it was pretty fun. And the illustrations were like classic, like 80s, you know.
Yeah,
they're
sure.
the line drawing, it's almost like one of those old school etchings. And I mean, it's just, there's not a lot to them, you know, it's literally just the outlines and stuff like that. But anyway, so right away you get your first choice. And I don't know if we should, what do y'all think? Should we talk about each storyline individually, or should we just kind of go for it? I don't know. I'm kind of curious.
I don't know. Either way would be good.
we could probably go through a couple of our favorites maybe, and then we can maybe end on all the different endings possibly.
Okay. Okay. So Red, will we get our first choice? Do you want them to send you back immediately, or do you want to wait around for the machine to cool down? Now, the first time I decided to wait around because I thought, yeah, it might be fun to explore a little bit. And as long as I can get back in time, what did y'all end up doing?
I did the same thing.
I absolutely was like, I need to go back right away.
My phone doesn't work. There's no Wi-Fi here.
You don't understand how upset my mom is going to be.
Yeah. And so if you decide to go back right away, then I think you try the machine again and it like overheats pretty much and breaks. And so then you're like, well, how am I going to get back now? And that's when they send you to the magician, which is, I mean, this world that we live in is crazy. It's time travel, yeah. It's magic, and it all exists. And I do like the point they really make a point about the magician looking a lot like Santa Claus.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if maybe he really was Santa Claus.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe they drew the picture first. <It's> like, well, this guy looks way too much like Santa Claus. Yeah. I told him it was for a Christmas book, but this is over the line.
It's a little too close there. Yeah.
We'll call him Wozniak.
Wozniak.
And we'll only mention Santa once.
Which the picture, the first picture you see of Wozniak, I don't know, it kind of creeped me out just a little bit there, you know. It's
well, why do the why do these young boys know this, creepy looking magician?
Maybe he had a magic shop down on the corner or something.
Maybe, yeah.
Are you guys looking at the picture as well? Because it looks like he's not wearing pants. He just has like a robe on.
Yeah.
those are his knees.
Yeah, I got it up here. Yep. He's got the cool boots, though. I like his boots.
He's this guy in his cool boots and a robe who just sits around waiting for kids to come visit him. And then he gives them potions.
Yeah. No, because it's a pretty good drawing, and they get the shading and everything, but the part that I think is the creepiest is his eyes. Like they drew his eyes just
that's it.
Weird. Well,
clearly the picture is haunted. and that's how the ghost sees through the picture.
Could be. But I love how he's got all the scrolls and everything behind him. And so he's got these books, but then scrolls as well. And he's wearing this robe with just a bunch of different stars on it, which, I, in my mind, I picture it as like a bluish purplish robe with like white, gold stars. And I can just, I don't know, something about it. It reminds me a little bit of like Merlin from, the Sword in the Stone or something from the Smurfs. I don't know. It's just, you think of a wizard and you think of the stereotypical, when people talk about wizards, and this is kind of exactly what you think about without the pointy hat,
Right. Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't give him the wizard's hat because everything else is to a T.
Except the boots. His boots are pretty red. Yeah. I couldn't pull them off,
though. That's still the Santa part of him.
I guess so, yeah. No, too much like Santa. Quick, change him into a wizard.
Put stars on him, yeah.
Put stars on him, yeah, there you go. And so we'll come back to that later. But the other choice was if you decide to stick around, then, they're like, yeah, okay, we'll kind of show you around. But all of a sudden their mom knocks on the door and is like, hey, the party's starting, come downstairs. And so they have to go and you're kind of stuck hiding there, which is another odd choice for the book because the plot doesn't really progress after that. It's literally just kind of like, well, I'm waiting, and that's about it. Until you hear something and then you can either go see who it is or you can, wait some more and you're trying to hide some more, I should say.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think
you had the option to go down to the party.
That's what it was.
Boys
that
sneak down as like a guest or to stay in the cupboard.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I snuck down as a guest the first time.
Just try to play it cool.
Same here. I was curious.
yeah, exactly. And it's funny because he's wearing like 80s era clothes. So he's not going to fit in like at all. Sir, what are those strange sneakers you're wearing?
is that a life vest you're wearing?
What do they say? You in the Coast Guard or in the Navy? Or... But because at least in the picture on the cover, he's got like a crazy jacket. It's like a blue, not quite members only, but it's got like it's a gray jacket with like some blue trim, and he's got like a big old red scarf, which I don't know why he would be wearing that if he was decorating the tree, unless like their heater was out or something. But
yeah, it was a gift from Aubrey.
Maybe it was. So, I chose to sneak downstairs, or you could wait and you know, kind of hide. And then it turns out that it's the boy's sister, I think, Enid. Enid, yeah. Right? That's how you say that name?
Enid, yeah.
Okay, yes. Yeah. And so then if you, I mean, again, there's more choices, but essentially if you go downstairs, you kind of schmooze for a while until they open the big doors and reveal, because it's Christmas Eve, they reveal the Christmas tree, one of the very first in the country, and it's on fire. They're like, check it out, it's amazing, and it's smoke. And everybody kind of runs out, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, we might get to it later, but like the Enid and like the main character both get trampled basically by all the adults running out of the building when it's on fire, to where like the main character like loses consciousness and then wakes up the next morning.
Yeah, it's actually the 26th. Like so.
Oh yeah, that.
So he slept for he lost consciousness for like a whole day and wakes up in the hospital. So this is like one of the first endings, and you wake up in the hospital and you're surrounded by your family and you're like, I missed Christmas, because they tell you it's the 26th. And they're like, no, we saved it for you. It's all good. We're glad you're okay. And so kind of a happy ending, kind of more of like a mediocre ending. I think if this was like the main series, you know, you probably would have like broken several bones or something. you had some concussions and you're okay now. But by the way, you also, you know, your leg is broken and you can't walk. No, I don't know. But it was one of those, you know, and I read it and I was like, okay, that's not so bad. And I was expecting something worse, you know, because at the time I didn't realize that this was going to be one of those, the younger reader books.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing with me. Every ending just seemed kind of mild. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense now.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't want, I guess, you know, you don't want the young ones to feel too depressed over their choices. Yeah.
Well, and it is a Christmas book too, I guess. So.
That's true. Yeah. It is Christmas. So you kind of have to have something a little peppy, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's the choice if you go down and schmooze at the party. There's another choice where if you try to hide, you run into Sister Enid, like I mentioned, and she has a secret. Just like the ninja, she has a secret.
The secret of the Enid.
The secret of the Enid. And she wants you, you know, and then you can choose to go look at her secret or not yet, or to help,
yikes,
you,
ask right?
her to help you find. Let me rephrase that. You can choose to. Okay, I don't know how to say this right.
You can choose to see Enid's secret or not.
Or not. I think this is totally Rat After Dark. No, so she goes downstairs. If you choose to you know, follow her and indulge her until she can, you know, get you to the two boys with the time machine, then she shows you a Christmas tree. She's like, check it out. And you're like, well, yeah, it's a Christmas tree. Well, you know, that's a big deal. And she's like, what? You've seen one? Like, you know, this is the first in the country or whatever. And or one of the first, I should say. And you're kind of hiding behind a couch or something. And you watch the butler start to put the candles on the tree, because, of course, it's 1840s and, you know, they don't use lights. They use candles, which always struck me as like being incredibly dangerous.
Yeah. I'll bet this wasn't the only Christmas tree to catch on fire.
Especially not that first year. No one knew how to do it right.
Yeah, I heard you just put candles on it.
Maybe like this, which though I did always wonder, like, how did they stand the candles up? Like, you know, that's something I've never researched. I never cared enough to research, but you know, it's one of those things that's like, wait, if they lit it with candles, how does that work?
Yeah.
Well, obviously it does not work well because it still catches fire even in this ending. And you, as the protagonist, you react immediately because you're awesome. And apparently you're, you know, in your own superhero book, I guess. And so you right away, very calmly, grab some water, you know, from a vase, and you douse the fire out. And there's a big commotion, and everybody opens the doors, and you hear, you know, "You saved us," kind of a thing. And suddenly you're like the hero, and it's this big, amazing deal, and everyone is congratulating you, and you're schmoozing at the party.
Yeah. Getting hugs and kisses.
Hugs and kisses, yeah, and handshakes. But again, no one seems to question who this boy is.
No.
Why is he dressed, you know, freakishly different from us?
Yeah.
It's just random stranger saved us at a party. He broke into our house, apparently, and was just to save us. But there's a certain charm, and then the rest of the night passes by in a haze, and suddenly you're being woken up by your sister, and she's like, "Come on, it's Christmas. Let's go downstairs and open presents." And you're like, "It's Christmas. I'm home." Okay. And then you just run downstairs and open the presents.
Yep.
Yeah. This is
just a dream, I guess.
I guess so. I don't know. But I think before you left, they gave you a little ornament, didn't they? And it was like
Golden Bugle or something like that.
Golden Bugle, yeah. And of course you run downstairs and suddenly there's the bugle.
Yep.
Was it real? That's like an Inception thing now. Is the top still spinning? Yep.
Which it had to be real because that Golden Bugle thing kind of threw me off a little bit. That's some gift.
Yeah, unless it was just one of the ornaments that he happened to catch, you know, he happened to see before.
That's
he,
true.
Yep. Yeah.
Before he hit his head. I don't know. Somebody called Christopher Nolan, I think. That ending was a little bit better than the other one, you know, because you're not in the hospital.
Yep. No. Yeah. It's a little bit more positive.
But then there was another ending or another one of the choices with Enid where she's crying because she just found out her parents were lost at sea somewhere.
No, that was a different girl. There was a girl that didn't have a name that had lost her parents at sea, like in like the African coast.
It was off the African coast. Wow, I didn't realize it was a different girl. Okay. Shame on me. Yeah. I should have read closer. Apparently I needed this book. Not the older ones. I would have missed so much. Yeah. So it was a different girl. And how does this happen? Somehow she ends up like you end up in a swirl of time, like the time machine room, I guess it starts to go haywire. Yeah,
I think it kind of just starts going on its own, doesn't it?
Yeah, it just starts to it just like goes crazy, malfunctions, and it starts to shunt everybody everywhere, and she kind of sees her parents in this time haze, and then suddenly...
And this really made me wonder, because she like floats over and gets on the boat with her parents, and I was wondering, did we just go back in time with this girl and put her on this ship, and now she's going to... She's gonna think and die at sea with her mom and dad, or is this the afterlife, or what's going on?
In the regular series, she died. She perished with her family on that boat. Well, I don't know. That's a good point. That's crazy. This is why you don't travel through time, because there's so many dangers, you know.
That's right.
But then again, they never really established the rules. Is it like Back to the Future time travel? Or is it like Time Cop time travel, where if you touch your past self, you know,
then you kind of like turn to ooze?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, you melt in a spaghetti version of a T-1000 or something. I don't know. That's the best way to describe it. But yeah, that was a strange ending. And then from there, I think you somehow are brought back into the present.
Yeah, I think. Do you just wake up on the floor at the base of the Christmas tree?
That one was kind of boring.
Yeah.
I mean, it was weird and trippy because, I mean, how does that happen? But
yeah.
Yeah, like you wake up right where you fell, and there's no like the next day or anything. I think it was like right afterwards.
It's literally, like you just had a quick, I don't know, maybe, I honestly don't know what happened, but so you're just there. So end of story. So those are all like the if you decide to stay and check them out, those are those endings. There might be one more, but I can't remember it right now. So, no, my favorite endings are coming up. So this is if you decide to go back right away because you don't want your parents to call the police, then this is when they try the time machine. Doesn't work, like we said. They go to visit the creepy Santa wizard, Woznik, which, again, that's just a funny name. And you kind of like try to, at least for me, I pictured him. I wanted to picture him like Merlin with that kind of voice, but I just, for some reason, every time I read his dialogue, it kept coming out in like a weird Cockney accent. like Jason Statham or Vinnie Jones. Like, that's what I heard in my head.
That's definitely not what I heard in my head.
Sorry. I just tried to picture that. And of course he's, you know, in this big old robe with the stars on it. So Woznik gives you two choices. And this is where it gets good. You have to make the right choice here. So you can either take some powder and it'll send you forward in time, but you might not be exactly, you might be a little off, you know, maybe a couple of years, maybe not the right place, something like that. Or it, what was the other one? It was
sleeping spell.
Sleeping spell. Yeah. And that one will get you straight to the your exact place, but you might rematerialize as something else. Which, I mean, how does this work? There's magic and time travel in the same story. Is that like really a thing? Unless you're like in Doctor Strange, maybe. I don't know. It's just,
it's
like, I mean, it's really like a Marvel adventure here.
And if this all happened in the past, I imagine that it's people are in the future are aware of it. So maybe when he fell down and disappeared, the mom was like, oh, he must be on an adventure in the past.
Yeah.
He's one of those magic time travels adventures.
He'll drink a potion and he'll be back in a little bit.
He'll be back in no time.
It might be tomorrow at the hospital or something. But
it might be at the Kravitz house.
Can you imagine that? Like, mom, I fell and, you know, hurt my leg. All right. Just take this potion. You'll be fine tomorrow. or if you're going out to a friend's house, hey, take some sleeping powder with you just in case. but yeah, so you have the choice here. And which one did y'all choose first? Because I'll tell you which one I chose first.
I chose the magic powder.
Okay.
And I went with the sleeping spell first.
You went with the sleeping spell. Okay, yep. So if you go with the sleeping spell, then you wake up in the neighbor's house, but you haven't missed it. You haven't missed Christmas, so it's not the end of the world. It's actually pretty nice because
you got there just in time.
You're fine. Everything's great. Yeah, like you said, you're just in time. Although there is when you take it, there he kind of hypnotizes you as well, which is another little creepy image that I really enjoyed here. Because you know he's got the big Santa beard, but he's like bald, but the way they draw his eyes just I don't know, they're so wide, something about it. And so you feel the tingle, and then all of a sudden you feel nothing, and then you're awakened and you're in the Kravitz front lawn, three blocks from home. Yay. And so you make it and everything's fine. But so that was that one. I will tell you, I did not choose that one right away. I chose the latter, which is a big mistake.
Yeah.
So I chose the magic powder, and I immediately was transported to the exact right time. Now here's another great Woznik picture there, and they still got those crazy eyes, man. I don't know what it is about him. Even though in that picture, the way that they drew his robe, it almost looks like he's wearing like a muumuu or something, you know?
Yeah. He's a little too comfortable.
I wouldn't want him, around my sons or anything.
Yeah, probably not the first kid he's gave a magic potion to.
So you take the powder, and it tastes awful, and so you're coughing and you're like spitting it out, and then you disappear. And when you awake, you're home, and you try to like yell yay, but you can't, and it's, you know, you can't move, nothing. And then your sister sees you, and she comes to grab you, and she's like, hey, where'd we get this red star, mom? And it's like, I don't know. And you're like trying to cry out like, Allison, mom, it's me. which is like the creepiest thing ever. And it actually reminds me of an old Tales from the Crypt episode where it's like there's two brothers and they play practical jokes on each other the whole time. And one of them invented like some serum that will help save your brain activity after you pass away. And so he like tricks his brother into thinking that he's dead. And the whole time, like he's, you know, you think like they're doing an autopsy and they're covering him up, but it's all just one big practical joke because they have a history of doing practical jokes on each other. And the brother ends up having like a real heart attack and passing away. And then he ends up like really injecting him with the serum, you know? And so then he's like crying out like, "Help, no, it's me." And he's still, his brain's working, but they think he's dead. And so it reminded me of that. And, you know, She's just there picking you up, holding you. And now you're like a red star that just gets hung on the Christmas tree. And that's it. That's like the big downer ending. And that's what I picked.
Yep.
So I think out of all of us, Jason, I think you make the best choices in life.
Maybe so, because that was the last ending I got to, was the transformed into a Christmas ornament, which I guess if you have to be transformed into something, at least it's, you get to hang on the Christmas tree every year, stay in the attic most of the year, but you get to see the Christmas festivities.
I don't know. I'd rather be transformed into almost anything else.
Yeah, that was a pretty rough one, but you know, you're right. You do get to be with all the Christmas everything.
Yeah.
But it does kind of terrible because you get to see all your family worry about you and, you know, cry about where their son was, and you don't get any presents or friends that's like the real downer ending. Probably should have started with that one, I guess, but they only get better from there.
It was my favorite ending out of all of them.
Yeah, mine too was the most interesting for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was it was something else. But yeah, so I mean, I think if I had to rate the book and if I had to rate it back as a kid, I think I would have enjoyed it reading it for the first time. And for sure, I would have like chosen more. But it's definitely, oh man, I don't know. It's now as an adult and knowing that it's for kids, it's definitely like a little bit lower, I think.
Yeah.
But as a kid, I probably would have given it like a good solid 8 or so, I think.
Yeah. For what it is, it's, it's not bad.
Yeah.
I just imagine R.A. Montgomery just completely like cluttered basement with papers everywhere, him just like writing ideas and throwing them in, and then someone coming in and grabbing a handful, like, "I guess I'll make this into a book." Make it so.
Yeah, but
name him Wozniak.
Yeah, that's the only contribution from his partner. Wozniak, I love it, write it down.
I also kind of imagine that's what R.A. Montgomery looks like.
Do you think
that he just kind of inserted himself into the book.
How great would it be to actually see a picture of him and that's what he looks like, just kicked back with tall boots and a robe on, you know?
The robe.
He's wearing the same moo-moo with the stars.
Yeah, the robe with the stars. That would be
pretty great. Oh, there's like three kids behind him just looking just like confused.
Oh, poor guy. Rest in peace. But
yeah, also, sorry, guys. He passed.
Yeah,
I read that too.
Yeah, sorry about that. But yeah, he wrote like over 50 of them, which is kind of cool. I wonder how the other ones are, and it kind of makes me want to just get a whole bunch more and, you know, like just scour my library or something to see if I can read them. I mean, I know my kids would like them anyway, so might as well.
Yeah, after reading this one to my 5-year-old, we're definitely going to have some more, which I think I saw at Target, they sell like box sets. They republish some of them, and you can get like sets of 4 for like $15.
Wow, that's not bad, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, good old Target. They got everything.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, and Secret of the Ninja. So that one's about an ancient samurai sword that arrives on the doorstep of your dojo. Does the ninja sword hold magical powers?
Me, I know what Secret of the Ninja is. I know what Secret of the Ninja is. I read it literally every single day of my life.
And yeah. So you gotta like, you know, figure out the history of the sword, and is it a warning? What does it mean? Because 5 other ninjas attack you. I mean, it's just that I remember reading it, you know, and again, I always chose the wrong ones. So apparently my choices in life are pretty terrible. But I like to think not, because I have my beautiful wife and children, and I work at a Christmas store. So I'll take it.
Yeah. It's either be a ninja or do that. I think I'd rather do that too.
Yeah. Yep, me too.
Well, I don't know. Ninjas are kind of cool. I mean,
they are pretty cool.
Michael Dudikoff.
Michael Dudikoff is pretty cool.
Oh, man. I hadn't seen that movie in such a long time. And the other day I put it on, when I was quarantined, I was like, yeah, let's watch American Ninja. And holds up.
Yeah. I remember I got Kristen to watch it a while back when we first moved to New York and didn't have anyone to hang out with or any friends or really anything. So like, we should watch these movies. I heard they're pretty, and obviously I knew what all the American Ninja, like, I heard they're pretty good. And so we watched them, and like, I'm sure she didn't like them at all, but the whole time I'm like, watch this. He's going to throw this arrow at this guy.
Yeah, they're pretty great. I mean, for what they are, so yeah, cool. They're pretty great.
Speaking of ninjas, I hate to give him any publicity, but here in West Virginia, we have one known as the West Virginia Ninja.
Really?
If you ever get a chance? Oh yeah, he's a good representation of the state. That's for sure. A good representative. Look him up on YouTube sometime.
One thing that I thought was really cool was that they would kind of use the Choose Your Own Adventure books to educate as well. So even though they were fun stories and you ended up dying or whatever in a lot of them, you would kind of learn about some of the things. So they had one on like the Olympics. There was one on like George Washington. I mean, there's one called the Mardi Gras mystery, which brings us back to that After Dark kind of thing. But, mystery of the secret room, one about rock and roll, but, beyond the Great Wall. So that one was about China. I mean, it literally was just, it would also kind of teach you about like history and culture and stuff like that, as well as taking on these different adventures. And so I kind of thought that was neat. And I almost see, at least in that aspect, like they're almost kind of the ancestor, I guess, of those magic treehouse books, where the kids are sent on an adventure and through magic, and, they go to different places and learn about cultures and stuff like that. And so, I mean, while you don't actually choose, in a way, they're kind of, maybe a cousin or something, distant cousin, I don't know.
Yeah. Which these books led to a lot of other. I mentioned to you, Jerry, here a while back about the Nintendo Adventure books. You said you kind of remembered those. And then these books get a lot of credit for the success of Dungeons & Dragons, too, because it was kind of the same. I mean, it was more a game, but it just kind of followed the same idea where you had to make decisions throughout the entire thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a lot of stuff branched off from these.
We should play Dungeons and Dragons. Get all the Christmas pod hosts.
Should we start a game?
All the Christmas podcast hosts and play a game of we'll make a Christmas version and do a Christmas Dungeons and Dragons.
Suddenly
the ice dragon from Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July appears. And oh man. Although, Todd Killian's got to be Santa. So
well, he's working
that's
on
what
it.
He says,
that's what
yeah.
It seems
yeah.
like.
Oh man. Yeah, that would be fun just to do a Christmas version of it or something. But yeah, I know what you mean. They did lead to a lot of cool things, and I mean, at least for me, I really enjoyed reading. And I kind of, after this, I kind of really got into like the Hardy Boys and Encyclopedia Brown. But the one that I really liked was You Be the Jury. I don't know if you remember those. It was like a book, and they would have like 10 different cases, and you'd hear both sides of the story. And in the end, you have to decide. And so you kind of had to solve like who was right and who was wrong, basically, just by some of the clues that would peppered throughout the story. And so while it's not quite the same as choosing your adventure, you do kind of have to make a decision as well. And yeah. So I always enjoyed those kind of interactive books. I thought they were pretty neat. Especially when you're jumping around, because you're always taught, to read from the beginning to the end. But here you're literally just jumping. And I think it would have been a pain if I had read that one book about the paradise inside UFO 5440. There's a paradise planet ending that I was talking about, which can only be reached by cheating or turning to the wrong page by accident. So I think I would have liked that one. But the Race Forever, I think, would have driven me crazy.
I'd have found that secret ending, because even this book, no more pages than it was. I'd constantly miss that little thing at the bottom telling me what page to turn to, and I'd flip to the next page and I'd be like, what the heck is going on? This doesn't make any sense. Who's this Santa Claus looking guy?
I think we forgot how to do these books, guys.
Yeah. It took a little bit to get back in the groove.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So these endings were kind of cool. The thing that I really liked about it was that there was really no ratio, like, throughout the whole series. So some books would have like a crazy number of like bad endings, and some would only have a few. Some would have a ton of endings. So there's one that has, especially early on, there was one that had 44 different endings, which is, I mean, that's just crazy to me. But then as they started getting towards the end, there was more like only 8, you know, things like that. And that kind of was a little more standard. But, you know, just the fact that you're like, okay, well, if I do this, then this happens. And then if I do this, this happens. I mean, you're literally writing like, you know, in that instance, you're literally writing like 44 different stories. You know, that's kind of cool to me that they could do that and just come up with it. Cause I have to make up stories for my son. He likes me to tell him a little story about little orange puppy and little green kitty and little purple mouse. And so I have to tell him these stories, and I'm like trying to rack my brain. And it's usually like, one day they were walking down the street and decided to get pizza. Yeah. So it's just funny that these guys would just go in like, all right, this happens if you choose this, and this happens if you choose that. But I think I got like one or two for Christmas as I was older. You know, they were usually in my stocking, but other than that, it was mostly just like going to the school library or, in those book fairs that they would have, you know, you'd go with your money and just buy a couple of books here and there.
Yep. Same here. I don't ever actually remember owning one, but, the library is where I would get mine. And back in elementary school, I had like an hour bus ride home. So I'd get these books out, and by the time I got home, you know, I could book through one oftentimes. Mm-hmm. So a lot of bus reading.
Right on. No, I never rode the bus. I did once, and then I hated it so bad because I didn't know anybody on the bus. And so then my mom was like, all right, fine. You know, just come to my school. And so then I ended up just going to her school.
Our 5-year-old.
And that must have been a really bad bus ride.
Well, it was boring. I didn't know anybody. So, and I think she just kind of wanted me to go to her school anyway. It's easier for drop-offs, you know, in the morning. Yep. Just take everybody to school. Because my mom was a teacher. But
yeah, mine was as well.
I think the bus is the only thing that keeps my 5-year-old excited about school.
Nice.
And my wife drives right by the school every morning, but he refuses. He wants to ride the bus every day.
Right on. That's cool. Good for him. Yeah. Stronger kid than I was, I guess.
Last year they had their like class parties and stuff, and every other kid, their parent was there, and they'd go home with him, and he'd be the only one. He'd stay, and we'd wait for him at the end of our driveway and get him off the bus.
Nice. The poor teacher's like, oh, go home, kid. Yeah. No, I'm sure he's a treat. So, guys, I have to ask, what would you say is your happiest memory of Choose Your Own Adventures, if you could kind of pick one? Or if not, then, you know, maybe the favorite moment of the book.
You can go ahead, Chris.
Let me see. I took notes. I had a few minutes this afternoon, so I took elaborate notes on a book that was made.
That's what we do. Yeah.
Well, I mean, outside of the, I'm trying to get the G.I. Joe one. That's like my biggest memory when it comes to these, Choose Your Own Adventure books. I'm kind of just excited to have it now, like in the collection, because my son's 15 months old now. He's not really in the mood to listen to me read books to him for more than 10 seconds. And so it's probably not going to happen anytime soon, but it's cool to have. And it's a good way to get him started reading. And it's I'm happy to have it in my collection of Christmassy sort of books.
Right on. Jason.
And, I think my favorite memory is, like I said, being back in elementary school and going into the library and specifically searching these books out and finding one and diving into it. That I have a lot of fond memories of. I can still remember my elementary school library. I spent a lot of time in there. So it anytime I get to think about it is a good time.
Nice. So. Yeah, for me, I think it was it would probably be getting that vampire book. And because I remember the cover was really cool. Although I do think it's funny that they're supposed to be like these space aliens, but they all still kind of look like Bela Lugosi, you know, as as a vampire. It's like they really just decided to go straight for it. Because I always thought those universal monsters were pretty cool. So that was like one of the first ones that I gravitated to. And I think that was just, yeah, I remember the cover and I was just so excited to have it. And of course, I'll post a picture of the cover on the... on social media as well, but it was just one of those. And then diving into it and then, you know, being utterly disappointed every time I died, but it's still a happy memory for some reason. I dig it. But yeah. And then of course, when my daughter, you know, it came in the mail and I started reading it, my daughter kind of was sitting there with me and it was special because she was really into it too. And she was like, no, choose that one. And so you could see the excitement in her eyes and I'm like, all right, she's going to like it. And so I think that was probably mine. But now we come to my favorite part of the show, which is a little section I like to call Gag Me with a Spoon. So this is where we do our best impressions of our least favorite part of the book in this case. And then we'll let the listeners vote. And this time will be purely for bragging rights because I know y'all already have stickers. And I'm in the process of designing a new one, but it's not out yet. So, we'll just see who does the best worst impression. And I'll let y'all go first. Just kind of set up, you know, which path you're taking and then go from there.
I can go first. I'm not taking any path. I read this thing cover to cover because I spent $9 on it and I want to get my money's worth. And on one of the back sections, besides the actual story itself, there's a lot of rundowns of other stories and places you can order books. I wanted to read about the long-awaited sequel to The Chocolate Touch.
Yep.
That's when John Midas enters a forbidden cave in the Australian outback, he stumbles into the beginning of time. Now, first of all, Midas and the Chocolate Touch, you assume
gold,
that's the beginning of gold, at least the first. So John Midas, I'm assuming, in The Chocolate Touch, the first one, touched things and turned into chocolate, yeah. Which is fine. It's a good book, I guess. So I'm going to skip down a little bit. He finds himself in Dreamtime, a mythical place where time itself began. Here, John must use his 20th century knowledge to teach Australian Aborigines the most basic survival skills. What about The Chocolate Touch, John? How is that a sequel to The Chocolate Touch? If it has nothing to do with it at all, but instead it has teaching Aborigines how to do things.
I think they're pretty good at surviving. I mean, that's like,
yeah, they're probably pretty
like what
good.
They
yeah,
do
yeah.
out there.
It's like one of the main things that they're into.
Exactly. Oh man. Jason, what about you?
All right. This one, it's not as good as Chris's, but, in the part of the book where you decide to go straight home and, you're back in the time machine and they're getting ready to send you back and, they're counting down right at the end here. I'll read it. 10, 9, Aubrey begins. Wait, tell us just one thing about the future, he pleads. Space invaders, you shout, as a brilliant white light flashes, followed by a loud kaboom. Then all the smoke, it stops working. What about space invaders? It's got me very curious. Is it the video game or, you know, are we actually getting invaded? What's going on here?
Those vampires I was telling you about, man.
You know, it could be. It could be. You never find out.
What an ominous thing to say to someone like
that. Yeah.
Yeah. See, but I guess it still wouldn't make sense if he shouted video games because they wouldn't know what that meant either.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And he thought that they would ask afterwards because he doesn't go anywhere. He's still there. They could have said, well, what are space?
What do you mean about that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He could have cleared it all.
You mentioned earlier space.
Oh, sorry. We got to go to this party. We'll be back. Oh man. So for me, I chose, when they go see Wozniak. And so he's telling you about the different ones that you can take and, you know, He tells him about, you know, I can also feed you a mix of several magic powders. This will transport you immediately to the future, but there's a chance you will rematerialize in a different form. That's terrible. Terrible.
It wasn't bad at all.
Yeah, I think we just found our dungeon
awesome.
Master.
Awesome. I'll write everything out tonight. Start a Google Doc. Oh, man. Guys, it's been a lot of fun talking with y'all. It really has. And just kind of remembering all these crazy adventures and things like that. But, you know, now I got to ask, you know, G.I. Joe, they taught us that knowing is half the battle. What do you think the other half is?
I think the other half is, if you're in trouble and need help, don't go to the creepy old man who's just going to try to give you powders.
That's definitely half the battle right there.
All right. Mine's kind of simple, but could have avoided this whole thing. If knowing is half the battle, then use a fiberglass ladder.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
For sure.
Or a sturdier ladder.
Yeah. Who doesn't just use chairs?
That's true. Yeah. It's just the top of the tree. Yeah.
Yeah. Why'd you bring a ladder into it? Just use one of the chairs.
Oh, man. Yeah. No, those are better than mine. Mine is if knowing is half the battle, the other half is trying every ending until you find the one you like and pretending that's the one you always meant to choose.
Oh, that's sweet.
Oh, guys, it's been a lot of fun. What do you want to plug? Like, tell me about your show. Tell me about your page.
I can go. I have a Christmas podcast with my wife. It's called Christmas Time in the City. We're on all kinds of social media. You can find us there. We're going to be putting out a lot of content for the holiday season. So find us. We have some big things coming in the immediate future and then in the pretty close to. Yeah, we have a lot of things happening. I can't talk too much about it, but find us and we're fun. We have a good time. We talk about Christmas in New York City and stuff like that.
Right on. Yeah, definitely check them out. It's always a good time. It's super interesting, and it makes you feel like, you know, you just really want to go and check everything out.
Yeah, especially with this year when you may not be able to get to go where you want to go. You might be able to at least hear about it.
For sure. Jason?
Yeah. Mine's very simple. I've got a Facebook page, Holidays Unknown, and it's relatively new, but it's just kind of my way of being part of the Christmas community. I try to bring back things that could stir up a little nostalgia for people, that something from the past that maybe you didn't know about the holidays, or something that you had forgotten about, and a commercial or an ad, anything like that could just bring back a little something for you. And I mentioned last time I spoke to you that in October, I'm going to do a little bit of Halloween stuff, which by the time this comes out, we'll probably be in the thick of it or just starting there in November. I'm going to post some things about Thanksgiving. I've got a few things for that. And then as December comes, I've got some things I've been holding till the end there that's a little better than the rest. So yeah, go on there, Holidays Unknown, and like the page.
Right on. Yeah, for sure. Check them both out. Good stuff, guys. And so, you know, one of my favorite things is when you get to the very happy ending and it just says the end in the big bold letters. So on that note, thank you again for being on. And I'm going to end it by saying the end. Check us out on our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you're feeling like you've chosen the best option for your adventure, leave us a review on iTunes. Not only does it help us reach more people, but you also get a free sticker. Now, don't forget to vote. Later, dudes.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Chris. We're a married couple living in New York City. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably love Christmas just as much as we do.
In our podcast, Christmas Time in the City, we talk about the history and traditions of the holidays in New York City. The Rockefeller Center Christmas tree, caroling in Washington Square Park, New Year's Eve in Times Square, the classic Christmas movies filmed here, we cover it all.
In listener mail, we answer questions from listeners like you that may be planning a trip or maybe just curious about us.
And in Christmas Confidential, we read anonymous listener-submitted Christmas confessions to help people finally get their deepest Yuletide secrets off their chest.
So subscribe now wherever you listen to podcasts, and we'll talk to you soon.
Unless you don't want to, then just forget about it.
Really?
What, too much?
No, it's fine.